Is Matt Harvey not getting up to 96.5 miles per hour?
They're still letting him try?
They're still letting him try. Okay.
I mean, I take it a couple different ways with Matt Harvey. The fact, like I said, I keep reiterating, the fact that he's actually pitching in early March after that surgery is very encouraging. Mm-hmm. Somebody, one of the beat writers, tweeted out yesterday that a scout was saying that this is fine right now. There's no indication that the Vela won't come back.
God, the Vela. It gets me. He knows me.
But, you know, I think it's a good sign. I'm still not investing in Matt Harvey. I just, you know, I think it's a crapshoot right
so,
now.
So when you say that, you're not investing in Matt Harvey, who's throwing, he's really basically topping out at 92. I think he pitched, 92 in the first inning yesterday, 91 in the next inning, and that was it for Matt Harvey's Velo. When you say you're not on him, does that mean, like, you're literally not going to draft this guy? Or it means it has to get to the 25th round? Like, what does that mean, Modiga?
It means I'd say maybe he's going, say, 10th round right now in a 15-teamer, say, 8th round in a 12-teamer. That's just too rich for me. I'd rather draft James Paxton over Matt Harvey all day right now. I mean, look, I am one of the biggest Matt Harvey fans. I want the Dark Knight to rise. Nobody's pulling harder for him than me. But, you know, when you play fantasy, you have to put your allegiances aside. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I do love him, as I mentioned. I mean, I'm a big Felix Hernandez fan, and I'm not drafting him neither.
Corey, I know you have been as anti-Matt Harvey as it comes here this spring and calling him a bum and saying he's not pitching with a rib and all that stuff, which is, of course, all true.
I haven't made anything up.
Yeah, of course. That's all true. Is there a point you guys in the draft where you would draft Matt Harvey?
No. Then you're going to end up cutting him.
But that's the problem. Because you draft Matt Harvey, you draft the Felix Hernandez, a guy that the industry in general are not high on in Matt Harvey and in Felix Hernandez. If they get bombed, how hard is it to cut one of these guys? Because like Corey just said, like, oh, you end up cutting him.
That's a good.
Thank you. I don't think it's as easy as that. Like, I drafted players last year. I'll give you an example of a guy like Mike Leake. Okay, I drafted Mike Leake as my third or fourth starter last year, maybe. In that month of April, he was as bad as you can get. Right, like he was awful, and I went up cutting him. He turned it around, obviously, in the second half. But it took me a while to cut him, and I'm someone, and as most people around here will tell you, Matt, I have an itch trigger finger. I'll cut anybody. I wanted to cut Anthony Rendon after May last year. I mean, he was god awful. But you can't do it because you always have the thought that I drafted this guy for a reason. He's going to turn it around and around and around and around. And Rendon, ultimately, it happened. So it's very hard for you to say, I'll draft Matt Harvey. He's throwing 92. I could just cut him. It's very hard to actually follow through with that statement.
Well, I think we all focus on adding the players and the fab budget and the waiver wire pickups. But just as important is your drops, who you wind up dropping. And I can make a perfect for instance. Last season, a guy that I took in the reserve rounds, I had him on most of my draft and hold teams because he was going so late, was Mike Napoli. And at the end of April, he missed like 3 games in a row. He had some neck injury. So he was out of the lineup. I thought he was going on the DL. So I cut him like the last Sunday in April, the first Sunday in May, whatever it may be. And I wound up regretting that in 2 of my big leagues because I went on to watch him hit like 30 home runs and drive in like 80 RBIs. And I was, you know, I needed him in my other leagues that I had him in. But that was really, really frustrating. I was kicking myself. So just as important is the edge is your drops. And as you said, it's... Once you invest in a player, you're going to hold out hope that he turns it around and you get a little stubborn. Like the other day, Corey was mentioning he didn't want to be that guy talking up Zach Greinke because he drafted Zach Greinke. And just it's human nature. We try and find, you know, reasons to make our argument or whatever, you know. So it's a tough process. And it's, you know, adding players. I think you got to be aggressive early on. With adding players, that's my philosophy. But in the same breath, who you cut is just as important. As you mentioned, like an Anthony Rendon. You know, 2 months later, you're looking back and you're like, damn, I was right, but...
And I'm someone that has no problem cutting anybody. I don't care, right? Like, I have zero loyalty. Corey will tell you he knows this about me. I want to cut somebody. This is obviously an exaggeration. Mike Trout has an O for week. I cut him. I'll go last year. The first week, I basically didn't draft one catcher league. I didn't draft the catcher. I'll pick one up. And I picked up, Wellington Castillo. And he had the worst first week. He had, 2 for 30, a million strikeouts. I'm like, screw this. Cut him. Picked up Yasmani Grandal. He got hurt. Picked up Wilson Ramos. Wilson Ramos had a bad week. I cut him. And I went through catchers all years. And, of course, Grandal, Ramos, and Wellington Castillo all had really good years last year when it was all said and done. But that's where it hurts you. But Corey, I think it's different cutting catchers and cutting guys like Wellington Castillo and Yasmani Grandal and Wilson Ramos. It's very different cutting those three guys than drafting Matt Harvey in the 15th round. Even though it's the 15th round, it's still Matt Harvey. And you drafted him with the thought that all of a sudden he could become Matt Harvey again, throwing 96 miles an hour. Why would you think that? Because
he stunk last year.
I get it. I
yeah, but he stunk last year, but there was injury. He was obviously hurt. And the guy wanted to, like you said, they wanted to take a rib out.
took his rib out.
But just to make your point even further, Greg, is if you look at last April and May, after those 2 months, look at guys like Justin Turner and Brian Dozier. Everybody was like, what the hell's going on?
Sure.
And from June on, Brian Dozier hit 28 home runs in the post-All-Star.
But what about a guy, this is what Mike Florio just brought up to me. A guy like Carlos Gomez. We drafted him really early last year, and he sucked. He got cut. For many people in many leagues, guys, the Houston Astros cut Carlos Gomez before you did as a fantasy owner, because we are almost loyal to a fault. And I get it. Scott Angle believes you want to hold on to a guy like June 1st-ish. You want to give him a solid 2 months to see what you got. I, of course, I can't do that. I will freak out if I have to wait to June 1st. But for a guy like a Carlos Gomez, a Matt Harvey, someone that is a bigger name that you have these monster expectations for, this leash is going to be long, and almost too long, in my
opinion. That's why you don't draft him. That's why you don't draft him. You could tie it into, I'm trying to think, football-wise, how many years we've said that, say a guy like Justin Hunter, and he comes out the first 2 weeks and he's nothing. People say, well, I'm going to keep him. What happens when you keep these guys on your roster? You continue to talk yourself into putting them in your active lineup, and that becomes a problem. So instead of dealing with that, I just don't draft, or I just cut immediately.
Well, two pitchers I'm hesitant on taking are Robbie Ray and Michael Pineda, because I could see the upside, and if I draft these guys and they're on my team, I'm gonna, as we say, I'm gonna try and talk myself into I don't want to cut him just yet, because if he does make that correction and he blows up and I cut him and the guy in my league picks him up and I'm going to be sitting there so it's a game and back and forth.
So that's two really good examples. Michael Pineda and Robbie Ray. I'll start with Ray. Ray was the unluckiest pitcher in baseball last year. It's been well documented throughout the spring. Right? His BABIP was a stupid 400 or something ridiculous like that. He strikes out more 10 batters per 9, but he got extremely, extremely unlucky. So people like you, Matt, an expert that is doing all these draft champions league and spending a good amount of money, telling people to draft Robbie Ray. If this happens again in April and May, the peripherals are good, but he's getting unlucky again. I feel like some of these experts, I'm not saying you, of course, some of these experts will say, well, he's getting so unlucky. It's bound to turn around, which leads me to Michael Pineda. It's the same thing every year. Oh my God, the stuff is so good. The strikeouts per 9 are so good. But, he's getting in these, he can't get the last guy out of the inning. He can't get that third strike. But all these peripherals are good, and all of a sudden the ERA is 4-5. Experts will say, look at these peripherals. He's going to be good. The luck just needs to turn around. This one thing needs to change. And then there's certain people, certain experts, and again, not saying you, that will hold on and hold on and hold on and hold on, and you're holding on too long.
Well, it's kind of like the gambler's fallacy. Say a team's won 10 games in a row. You're going to start betting against them because they're going to lose eventually and stuff like that. But with the expert, with the industry leagues, expert leagues, whatever you want to call them, there are guys that will draft guys because they'll say, this is my guy, or this is the guy that I want to tout for the year. And I think those guys are going to hold on to that guy to try and prove their point to the deepest end that they can take it.
Corey, I don't want to put a date on it, of course, because it depends on the player and whatnot. But you don't feel the sense of loyalty to, forget your last pick, your last scrub bench player, your scrub catcher. I don't care about that. To a guy that you're picking, and maybe your answer is right, that like, I'm not getting involved in this. Like, screw it. I'm not drafting these guys. But Michael Pineda and Robbie Ray and Matt Harvey and Felix Hernandez, some of these guys that have obviously, you have reason to believe they are going to be in for a massive turnaround in 2017. How much loyalty is too much loyalty?
See, you can't spend the whole month of February and March talking up a player, then cut him on April 15th.
Of course.
So, of course, you have to, you know, trust the process. There you go right there, Joel Embiid.
I got you.
You got to trust the process a little bit in the situation. I think I can go to mid-May Memorial Day tops.
Tops.
But mid-May is like the likely cutoff
day. Like drop dead day.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But to that point again, like I mentioned Justin Turner and Brian Dozier. From June on, those guys were fantastic. I mean, you missed out. You drafted those guys. You got their two crappy months that really hurt you, and you missed out on 4 months of excellent production.
Sure.
So it's,
it can go either way.
You know,
100% it could. It easily could go either way.
It definitely is a fine line you have to walk. And, you know, I don't care who you are. And there's been guys that have won the NFBC main event, and they've been asked, did you make any mistakes? And they all say, look, I've made mistakes throughout the season. But, you know, you have to hit on the right players. You have to have a little luck. I don't care. Even in real sports, the good teams get the bounce here and there. Maybe they create that opportunity. You want to say yes. But, you know, everything has to, you know, it's a cycle. It's things that got to go right in many different places.